Good morning, Toby.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you doing?
Not too bad. Actually, from Monday morning, it's other than the one small hiccup, it's been going pretty good. How about you?
Pretty well. So we're ready for another edition of You Ought to Know. Did you have some topics in mind? I have a couple, but let's start with yours this time instead of my going on, you know.
We had a couple of interesting cases last week with warning lights in the instrument cluster and misconceptions about how they actually operate. So I thought we'd talk about warning lights in your instrument clusters and cluster and when you need to worry and when you need to maybe just not worry quite as much about them.
Well, that sounds like a very good thing because that will lead then into some questions I had about a similar type of lighting thing. Go for it.
Okay. The most popular one that everybody seems to know exactly what it is the check engine light. Normally, that will appear as a tiny little engine in your instrument cluster. And when that comes on, all that means is that your engine control module at some point in time has detected somewhat of a disturbance in the vehicle's systems, specifically related to the emissions systems. That's all a check engine light does. It monitors the emissions systems of the vehicle and the vehicle's performance. So it does not monitor things like engine oil level, engine coolant level. It does not monitor anything like that.
Well, that's a very interesting and important point because I must admit I was not aware of the limited focus of that particular light.
Yep, you know, that's actually something that most people think that the check engine light does. The check engine light is strictly, it's part of the federal emissions system mandates, and it's there just to monitor the vehicle's performance. So, like I said, I mean, it's not going to monitor things like, you know, lots of people will say, well, you know, my check engine light came on, and I just had an oil change, so I got out and I checked the level of the oil, you know, and it's fine. And it has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
What it does is it monitors the vehicle's emission system. So that way, what that basically means is if it detects any sort of a runability problem, maybe an engine misfire, or something that is causing the vehicle not to run at optimum performance, that's when that check engine light will trigger. And it usually can happen under a couple of different ways. That check engine light will trigger after the vehicle has run kind of like a systems check.
Okay.
Or if it detects an actual active problem. So if you're driving along and your check engine light comes on and it stays on and it's on steady, all that means is that at one point in time that module has detected a little bit of a problem. Now, if that check engine light comes on and starts flashing at you rapidly, that's when you have a problem that will require you to find a safe place to pull off alongside of the road.
Oh, okay. So,
go ahead.
I was listening to someone talk about a situation where they had had a vehicle, this was back a while, but one reason or another, leaded gasoline had been put into a vehicle that it was suggested strongly run with unleaded gasoline. And the result was, it was thought that the catalytic converter became unable to function as it did. And as a result, the vehicle began to lose power. Would that be something that would happen? And if so, would a check engine light show that?
Yes. Because a catalytic converter is part of the emission system, and it is something that is strongly monitored by your engine control module. More than likely what happened is his catalytic converter, well, he either fouled the oxygen sensors by running the leaded gas in there. And by fouled, I mean that the oxygen sensors are sensors that screw into your exhaust system. And depending upon the type of system that you have, you can have anywhere from 2 to 4. And an oxygen sensor, like I said a little bit ago, screws into the exhaust system, and it monitors the exhaust as it flows through the system. you will have at least one before the catalytic converter and one after the catalytic converter. And without going into too much technical detail, really what they're doing is they're monitoring the condition of the exhaust before and after it goes to the catalytic converter. So if the leaded gas caused the oxygen sensors to become fouled or coated in any way or somehow was made it to where they were unable to read properly, that could have triggered a check engine light. But more than likely, if he actually experienced problems with the catalytic converter and actually lost power, inside of a catalytic converter, it's kind of like a metal honeycomb. It's made of a bunch of different materials, and that's how a catalytic converter will clean the exhaust, quote-unquote clean the exhaust.
Okay.
And what happens is that honeycomb becomes too hot, it will actually melt and start to crumble.
Oh.
And when it crumbles, it blocks the exhaust flow from the engine, so your engine can't breathe. And that will definitely cause a loss of performance as well as a check engine light.
Okay. All right. And so you had some issue that came up recently that involved a check engine light?
Yes, a check engine light and an airbag light. And I think a lot of another common misconception behind an airbag light, I mean a check engine light, is if it's on, but it's not on for something that is deemed vital to the runnability of the vehicle, a lot of people will tend to ignore it because they don't, for lots of different reasons, but you know, if somebody does not feel that problem that their engine control module is detecting is deemed to be important, then they tend not to repair it. And there's a couple of different problems with that. First of all, once again, like I said, a check engine light is there to monitor your engine control module, and it's on all the various systems that are associated with it. So if you choose to leave that check engine light on, it's not like if another problem that does come up behind it that, you know, actually may be of concern, you're not going to know if any other problems exist because that check engine light has been on. It's not like, you know, if you have a code in there for your secondary air injection system, which is very commonly on in some Volkswagens and Audis because it is one of those systems that's kind of deemed like I said, quote unquote, not entirely vital to the runnability of the vehicle. But, you know, if it's on for your secondary air injection system, it's not like it's going to go off and then come back on to tell you that you have a second problem coming up that might be a little bit more important.
Okay.
So you're never going to know if new problems are cropping up in your vehicle's control module. The second problem with leaving your check engine light on is that if your check engine light is on, your engine control module is always going to think that there is a problem. So it will limit the capabilities of itself as well as of the engine in the vehicle. You know, you're going to experience a loss in fuel economy. You are going to experience a loss in vehicle performance. There's just going to be some issues that your vehicle is never going to run at its full efficiency because that engine control module has detected a problem and it thinks that the engine it should be handicapped in a way to protect itself.
Ah, okay, all right, okay, that makes sense. Definitely makes sense. So go ahead.
I was going to say, and then the issue with the airbag light is. You know, it's depending upon your viewpoint, some people view airbags as being extremely important and other people maybe not so much so. And so you'll have a lot of cars will have different lights for to detect problems with the seatbelt or the seatbelt warning system, and then they'll have a separate light for the airbag system. So depending upon your viewpoint as to how important you think those systems are, you know, you do have to be advised that if you have an airbag light on or a seatbelt warning light on and you choose not to do the repair for that system because, you know, you say that the code is actually for the passenger airbag, but you choose not to repair it because, you know, you maybe only have a passenger right in the passenger seat maybe two times out of the year. Well, the problem with that is when that light is on, once again, you can't you can't tell if other codes are cropping up behind that light. And so you have to be advised that in the event of an accident, that particular restraint system may not operate as designed, which can obviously be a very serious problem.
And as I think back over time, I know that airbags came in, and check me if I'm correct. Initially, there was an airbag for the driver, and then the passenger airbag was added pretty quickly. And then, of course, there are all kinds of other. There are knee airbags, side airbags, drop-down airbags, so that in a modern vehicle, there may be 8 different airbags.
Absolutely. The most common setup on a modern vehicle, as you said, was the driver's airbag, passenger airbag, and then you're going to have 2 airbags on the sides of the 2 front seats, and then you have the side curtain airbags that run up along the pillar of the vehicle that will extend into the back seat, and those will drop down just like a curtain in the event of an accident between the occupants and the side of the vehicle. There's also regularly called side impact airbags as well. So, and something that I do need to make sure people do know about too is if you do have a vehicle that has the side impact airbags in the front seats, the easiest way to tell is there's going to be a tag that says SRS, which means the Supplemental Restraint System, or it'll say airbag on the tag on the side of the seat that's closest to the door. If you have that little tag on your seat that indicates that you do have an airbag present in the seat, do not put seat covers on those seats. Not unless they're designed to work with side impact airbags.
So where actually are those side impact bags coming out of, and how do they deploy?
Right out of the side of the seat.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. They come right out of the side of the seat, and they will deploy very violently, very explosively out of the side of the seat. And it's just designed to keep, you know, the whole purpose between the airbags and the seat belts in a vehicle is to limit the mobility of the occupant as much as possible. So they use airbags as a way to cushion, but also as a way to kind of keep you in your seat, and so where you're not flopping around and hitting things when in the event of an accident.
So all of these airbags, interestingly enough, do they deploy differently? In other words, if someone is in a vehicle that's struck from the side, do only the side airbags deploy, or what happens? How does that work? That's complicated.
That is kind of complicated, and it kind of depends upon how the system is set up. The majority of systems, if you're hit from, like, the rear, then you only have the front impact airbags go off. If you're hit from the side, generally all the airbags will go off.
Okay.
This kind of depends because there's a whole bunch of different sensors that are located throughout the vehicle that detect certain types of movements. And it depends, like, it's also theoretical that if you're in an accident that the airbags won't go off at all. It kind of depends on how the vehicle is hit and the amount of motion that is present after the accident. So, that is kind of a complicated question.
And also, I'm visualizing the interior of a vehicle. I'm sitting in the vehicle. I have headrests also. Now, these are fairly passive. Are there active headrests that do something beyond being there as a place for your head to rest?
The most obvious kind of example that I have for that is a lot of convertibles. I know that this system is definitely present in the Mercedes, BMW, and Audi convertible models. Will have an active headrest that is actually pyrotechnically charged, just like your seatbelts and your airbags. And in the event of a rollover, the headrest will eject that will prevent the occupant's heads from striking the as the vehicle rolls over.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. But in most vehicles, the headrest remains there, and presumably your head would rest against it, the bags deploy, and everything is good.
Right. It keeps your head from snapping back and forth from the impact.
Okay. Okay. Well, we've drifted a little bit from the beginning discussion of lights on the dashboard to pyrotechnics and exploding airbags, et cetera. Were there any more other lights you wanted to talk about?
You know, you have the common, you also have the more common ABS lights, engine oil level lights, coolant level lights. You know, really the important thing to take away from this is no matter what the light is on your instrument cluster, the fact of the matter is that it indicates a problem with the vehicle. And it is always something that you do need to pay attention to. It is something that you do need to have looked at. And if at all possible, the repair needs to be performed to make that light go back out. Most people, when you ask them, you know, what are you looking for with your vehicle? You know, what do you want out of it? They'll almost always tell you, I need reliability and longevity. You know, they want their vehicle to last a long time because most people are not actively seeking to replace a vehicle. So, you know, if you want that longevity, if you want that reliability out of that vehicle, you have to let the vehicle work as designed. You have to let it do its thing. So that means that anytime you have a light that comes on, you know, regardless, and I'm not saying that, you know, if you have a check engine light that comes on that you have to have it repaired right that second. I mean, just like I was kind of saying earlier, you know, if you have a check engine light that comes on steady, you know, at your earliest convenience, make an appointment with the shop of your choosing to take it in there to have it diagnosed and then get it repaired as soon as you're able. But that type of a light is a lot different than like what I said with the check engine light that comes on and is flashing rapidly at you. The check engine light, or if any light comes on your instrument cluster and starts flashing rapidly at you, that's how you know that you have a real problem that's going to require you to take care of it as soon as possible. Especially if it's a little oil can that comes on, or if it's your coolant light that comes on and starts flashing rapidly at you. That means that you've either experienced a sudden loss of oil pressure or a sudden loss of coolant and the vehicle's in danger of overheating. So those are the important takeaways for today. You know, if you have a light that comes on, you know, please get it into your shop to get it fixed and taken care of. If you have a light that comes on and starts flashing at you rapidly, find the safest way to pull over and either take a look or call a tow truck to tow you into the nearest shop. That way you don't experience a damage to the engine that could go from, say, maybe a $400 repair and suddenly now it's a $4,000 repair. So those are the major takeaways for today.
Okay. I have one quick last question dealing with lights. Interior lights go on, and they're automated these days so that when you open a door, the lights go on, you close the door, they remain on, and then they gradually go off most of the time. But occasionally, the door may remain open a little bit, the switch is not quite working the way it's supposed to, or you have inadvertently turned the interior light on to be on all the time. How long would it take for that to drain the battery?
That's dependent upon the vehicle as well as the overall health of the charging system and the battery. It's also dependent upon the outside temperature too. So that one's kind of difficult to say. A lot of newer vehicles have what's called a power saving mode, which means that it will say you do leave your headlights on, or you have an interior light that stays on. You didn't necessarily notice it. It's a system that's designed to detect when the battery gets down to a certain level, and then it will just automatically shut off power to whatever is draining down the battery. It'll automatically shut off your headlights or the interior lights. So it kind of depends upon, I mean, it could be anywhere from an hour to, I've had, you know, vehicles where the interior light was left on overnight and it still started in the morning.
Right.
Granted, it was really, really slow and almost didn't start, but you know, it just really depends upon the overall health of your charging system and the outside temperature.
And it seems to happen, I've noticed on a few vehicles where, for whatever reason, it might even be the rear hatchback closing, something of the sort where it closes, but not quite the adjustment for whatever switch mechanism is designed to turn things off doesn't quite operate.
Yeah, and this is very problematic in a lot of the 2000 to 2005 Volkswagens. They had very problematic door latches because there's micro switches in those door latches, and that's how it detects, how the system detects whether or not the door is open or shut. There's a little micro switch in there. And it was very common on that year of Volkswagens, Jettas, Passats, Beetles, whatever, for those door latches to malfunction. And you had issues ranging from the alarms going off when you really didn't want them to, all the way up to, you know, interior lights staying on, door windows not working, that kind of stuff. So, you know, it just kind of depends. But there's little micro switches in there. So, yeah, you're right. If you don't shut the door quite all the way, then if that micro switch does not, I believe, close the current, then it will not shut that interior light off.
Okay. Well, Toby Edmonds, for another edition of You Ought to Know, I think we did a pretty good job of enlightening people. Any last comments?
I would really like to thank everybody that came by Edmonds and Port Auto on Saturday for our Wheels to Prosper car giveaway event. It was very successful. The family that was chosen was very excited, very happy, and we were very fortunate to have that opportunity to give back to our community in the way that we did. It was truly a momentous occasion, and it was really wonderful to be both on the giving and the receiving ends of this situation, and it's definitely a moment that I'm never going to forget. So once again, I'd like to thank everybody that participated in that and made that event possible. And we look forward to doing another one sometime in the future.
Okay. Well, thank you, Toby. Have a good day.
You too, Mike.
Bye-bye.